You should create one that reads our minds and turn it on and off by itself. Oh, they are. They might have to implant something in my brain. I might not like that. But so what we're going to do in these three classes is this. And after, actually, it's important to say, after these three next classes, we'll have 2 weeks of break because it's my trip to Brazil. I'll be going to Brazil to teach there, most of you know. So we're going to have, if not all of you know, and there'll be a break, but we have three classes counting today. So what we're going to do is this. We're going to talk about early church today and next week, all right? Early church. And we're going to try to deal with as early as possible. Because if we go into archaeology of church, then we could get Middle Ages, and this has no end. And if we try to get, like, every detail about early church, there's a lot of debate, a lot of confusion, a lot of disagreement, and it's complicated. And we're going to address a little bit of that, like real evidence, again, against tradition, against, you know, what is unreal evidence or fake evidence. So we're going to be talking about that, unfortunately, in these two. I mean, I think it serves a good purpose for us. So today and tomorrow, we're going to be talking about, we're going to start with the Ascension. Then we're going to deal with Pentecost, first churches, Christian symbols, early Christian symbols, early Christians, and in first century Christianity. That's what we're going to do. The last class we're going to do with the destruction of Jerusalem at the year 70. So at the year 70, Jerusalem was destroyed. And that is a very important element. So these first two classes, we're not going to deal much chronologically. We're going to be kind of going back and forth. We're going to sometimes go to 4th century and have to go back to 1st century to look for evidence. But then we're going to come back to 70 AD, which is such a formative time. It seems that the church really flourishes after 70 when the Jews are suppressed and the temple is destroyed. They are expelled. And what happens to the Christian community. But it's important as well for us to know what happened to Jerusalem. What is the evidence? And why there is a huge mosque on top of where was the temple today. So the last class we're going to deal with the destruction of Jerusalem temple. The archaeology. And don't expect much because there is a mosque, as I said, on top of it that you cannot dig in. Or under, but you can dig around, and that's where some of the evidence is found. So we're going to talk about the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple, all right? So we have been talking about Jerusalem. This is the map that we have been using. It's one that I've found more useful, although, as I explained to you, there's a lot of debate, right? For instance, there's a debate why when they draw this map, they didn't close the walls around here. They put a dent over here. And we discussed last week that's because most likely they wanted to leave the Church of the Holy Sepulchre outside the city because the Bible says that it was outside the city. Archaeology or topography studies and some archaeology point out that it should have been probably something like this. There's a huge debate, but that's what we're using. All right? Now, what happened after Jesus resurrected? He met with his disciples for 40 days. He was seen by over 500 people. That's what Scripture says, right? And he went to Galilee, met the disciples in Galilee, then went back to Jerusalem. And it seems that a lot happened in Jerusalem. But really, there's no really real event, real element. The most meaningful event that happened was, first, the meeting in the upper room, right, in the cenacle, in that place where they gathered for the Lord's Supper, and they were gathered for hiding, afraid. Jesus meets them there. He meets them in a beach in Galilee, so there's not much there for us. That's so what we know. And then he meets the disciples again in Jerusalem in the Mount of Olives. Right, so that brings to us the meaningful thing. So, Mount of Olives is around here, right? about the temple. There is a valley right here in the middle, the Kidron Valley. So that's where we're going to go. So we're going to go to the ascension site. And as you look through, and here again the wall, here will be Jerusalem, the western wall, the valley, the Gethsemane, and here will be up in the hill, because it's a mount, right? So if you Google and you go, you will find that there are three places called the Church of Ascension over there, right? So you need kind of to know. So when you look from Jerusalem, for instance, which is the next one, you will see two big towers or steeples that are, one is the Church of Ascension, which is actually a Lutheran church that was built by the king of the Second Reich. So Hitler had the Third Reich, who was the Second Reich king, who built it for the Lutheran church. And this is the top, the highest place in the Mount of Olives here. And this is the Russian Orthodox Convent of Ascension, and there is a church there that is also called the Church of Ascension. However, none of those are believed to be the site of the Ascension. The site of the Ascension is called the Chapel of Ascension, which is, just a little bit, Stephen, which is right here. Okay? Right here. And you won't see because it's behind those trees or between those trees. All right? So this is the Chapel of Ascension, right here. And do you know what this is? Again, as many of the sites that we have seen, is a minaret, which the Muslims that came later, acknowledging a sacred place, built their mosque there, right? Adjacent to that, there is a tomb. There is a tomb cave, that is believed to be Prophet Huda or Prophet Huldah. A prophetess from the Old Testament. A Christian woman and a Muslim woman. So it's a sacred site for the three religions as well. And it's adjacent to the wall, I think, on this side here. So inside the chapel, what you see, it's very small. It's like a rotunda. It's like a round, right? And what you will see is this thing here. What is that thing? Do you know? Who know? Any of you? It's the rock. Which rock? Do you see anything particular there? I don't see either, but they say that this is the rock that Jesus stood before ascending. And this is the rock that stood because it is, there's his feet print in it. And that what is called the Church of Ascension, right? And that is believed to be the place where Jesus ascended. So this is a Christian holy site, Muslim holy site, and also kind of Jewish because there is the tomb of Prophet Huldah. And this is what we have as the last site of Jesus on earth. Not much archaeology there, just tradition. It's interesting because there's a place that keeps showing up when we read the Bible, which is a place that is usually referred to upper room or cenacle, which is the place where they had the Last Supper, the place where Jesus meets with the disciples when they're hiding, and also the place where the Pentecost happened. They were praying, 120 of them were praying, and the Holy Spirit falls upon them that day, the day of Pentecost. So that is a very important site. And we have visited that site before. And this is another perspective of the upper room. So here, upper room. Remember what I told you that is in the bottom room? I don't know if you remember. It's a synagogue, that is supposed to be the tomb of David. So the Jewish use the bottom floor, and there is a Jewish synagogue, and the upper room is used by Christians, and guess what? Muslims, because they built a mosque over there on top of the Christian building as well, and they venerate that building as well. However, as you see this building here, you will say that it's not a first century building, right? There's definitely not. It's far. It's few, many, many centuries older, right? So the question is, how is that? So it's very interesting because then we try to figure out, where is this room? If Christianity, as Christianity found these places and usually built huge churches, right? We have built churches. We have the Church of Nativity, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. We have several important churches over there. Why there isn't a church that celebrates Pentecost, that celebrates, why is this a building that is, so there's a lot of debate. So looking at older maps, there's a map of 1472, a map of Jerusalem, which is a map from, that is found in the Christian tradition, and this is a map of how Jerusalem was. And the upper room is placed here. Cenacle is here. And this would be north, and this would be south. So it would be on the southeast part of town. All right? An earlier map that is a mosaic of the St. George Madaba, a church in Jordan, that is from 1560 to 1565, so 6th century, has another map of Jerusalem, and this will be north, this will be west, has already the upper room in the southern part of town, and has, look, this building here, which is an early church that is called Hagia Zion, Holy Zion. It's a church that is referred to in very early documents as being the first church in the world. The church where the early Christians gathered, as we read in Acts, and later built the church. But there's no, we don't know where this church is. This church has not been found. But the location is closer to where what's been called the upper room. Another map, mosaic, from the 6th century as well. It's a mosaic from the Basilica Maggiore in Rome. We'll bring here this rotunda here, you probably remember, is the rotunda of the Holy Sepulchre Church, more to the north, and this is the northern gate. And here will be the south, and here will be the west. So, has it here? I'm sorry, then I'm saying, I'm changing east and west, right? I'm sorry. It could have been. So, this is north, and this is south. So, if I'm north and south, this will be west. Thank you. Yeah, you're right. This is west. Yes, of course. The sea is on the east. The sun. I'm sorry. See? Thank you. Good in archaeology, terrible in geography. But this, again, is where that upper room. So you see, the early church really valued that place. In the various representations of early Jerusalem, and the earliest we have is 1560, so it's 5 centuries after Jesus. It's not precise at all, like 5 centuries, it could be completely new thing. But at least it shows that this room was important. But we don't know where it is. And we don't know. So this is a building, as we have seen before, that is called the upper room, right? We look from the back. This is the perspective here, the upper room. Another photo of it. This is the entrance. You remember, or probably not, but if you do, the inside. This is photos of the inside here. This is the door, okay, where you come through, where we just saw. And this is the room. Here is looking from the door to the rest of the room. And it has a, can you just go back one, the other photo? This is a praying stand for Muslims directed to Mecca. And here on this wall, behind this pillar, there will be some Quran quotes. So this has been also used by. You can move forward. So this is then the building. But this building, as you see, has Byzantine columns, later Byzantine. So this is believed to be from at least 1,000 years after Jesus. And this building is believed to be. The Orthodox Jews don't even believe that the upper room that is believed to be David's tomb is really David's tomb. So there's a lot of debate. There's not real archaeology. But then in later years, a new theory of a new place has arisen. And it's at least interesting, and I want to bring it up. And again, as I said, we're going to be dealing with early church. So I'm going to go until we go today, and we pick it up from where we left from today, and we finish next. So we go. If you have questions, you can be raised. So this is, again, the map of Jerusalem. Here's the Dome of the Rock. Okay? Here's Gethsemane, Mount of Olives and Gethsemane. And here you see King David's tomb. Do you see King David's tomb? Here, this, you probably don't, but it's King David's tomb over there. Here would be this the marker, right? Yes, you see there? What do you read here? It's a site that has been advertised as First Catholic Church. Very interesting. It's a very interesting site. Because King David's tomb is the upper room, which in the bottom is King David's tomb and the upper room. But very close to it, a few feet from it, is this place, which belongs to the Greek Orthodox Church. And the Greek Orthodox Church will say, this is the site of the early church. So there's another map. The following slide is a close-up. So this is the close-up. Okay? So here is King David's tomb. This room here, the building. Here you see a major basilica. And do you know what is this basilica? It's called Dormiton Abbey. Dormiton from sleep. And it's the place where it's believed Mary, the mother of Jesus, is buried. So it's a basilica dedicated to Mary. It's one of the huge ones there. And it is believed that Mary was buried here, where in the vicinity where it was, the upper room, perhaps the same complex or around the same place. However, a short walk away, you come here to this empty site, and this was a kind of a training center for Greek Orthodox kids, like teenagers of Greek teenagers or members of the Greek Orthodox kids. They would win a summer in the Holy Land. And they would come, and this is a campsite for them. There's a soccer field and some facilities. They would do some courses. In that place, there is a site that the Greek Orthodox, it's not accessible. If you go there, you cannot visit. It's closed. Believes that is the site, indeed, of the first church, the apostolic church, where they gathered, where Pentecost happened, where they gathered in the early church. And there are ruins that they believe so. So in the middle, here would be the soccer field. So in the middle of the soccer field, there is this little enclosure here. And this little enclosure, it shows that in here, there was a mikveh. Do you remember what a mikveh is? The mikveh is the Jewish bath where they go in, and wash themselves, and come out. So this point out that it was a first century house of a Jew. And only Jews of high class, only Jews that had a lot of money, would have their own private mikveh. And this means that they had a huge house. That was a huge house. So this complex has not been thoroughly excavated, but you can see from another perspective here. So you would go through this side, and here's where the water would be sitting, and you would come through the other side. And this is how you will purify yourself. So these mikvahs, they are found everywhere. And it's very interesting that many of these mikvahs became baptismal fonts or fountains for Christians. They became a place for baptism for Christians in the early church. However, the most interesting element in here is when you go down. Because this place was drained of the water to be used for some purpose that we don't know. So as you get to the bottom of the steps, you see that first entrance here. And to this side here, looking back now, there is a cave. So you see an entrance. And as you go in, there is a room, another cave, and another room. And in this cave here, they found out that it was a cistern. So it makes all sense. They would gather the water would pull that and would create the mikveh. But this was drained and it was dug to look like a cistern while it was being used as a hiding place, perhaps. As you go in through the next corridor over there, oh, come one back, please. Here, you will find another cistern as well that would be the perfect hiding spot or a perfect spot to meet in secrecy. A perfect spot to meet in secrecy. Thus, the Greek Orthodox will say that this is the house of the upper room. And of course, if there's an upper room, this upper room was the upper room of a house. And it was a major house. If it fit 120 people, it is a huge. Let's say it could be half of this building here. It would be huge, right? They are probably crammed in. I mean, there's not many places that 150 people would fit in those days. But it was a major house. And that house was from one of seen as high. Most likely, what we believe it is the mother of John Mark, the writer of Mark. So it was one of the Marys. There are many Marys, right, that follow Jesus. She was one of the Marys. She was the mother of John Mark. And they were of wealth. And they were a noble family from Jerusalem. That's what is believed according to tradition. So that all would fit. And this belief, and this is believed to be. Again, very interesting. But we cannot know. The interesting thing is that one church, the Hagia Zion, has not been found. Actually, some diggings that were done in the soccer field that is adjacent to that building believe that there are ruins of a very early Byzantine church that they believed might have been the Hagia Zion. And if it's the Hagia Zion, it would prove that that is the real site. But it has not been dug. And it's interesting because we are in 2024 and many of these sites have not been dug. You know, many, you know, it almost moves me to say, what's going on? I mean, let's gather a crowd and start digging over there. But it doesn't work that way. it has to have the goodwill of those that own the land. And sometimes they don't. They don't want to turn their site into an archaeological site. And why wouldn't they? Well, first of all, because if it turns to an archaeological site, you kind of have to give up the control of the land because it goes to the Israel Antiquities Authority. And then if you had a plain field and it's now a hole, you don't have a plain field anymore, right? So you cannot build anything on top of it. You cannot use it. You cannot play soccer in there anymore. And as frivolous soccer could be, but it's theirs, right? So there is also, on the part of Christians themselves, sometimes the interest of keeping the main sites as they are, the tradition, not dig much. And there has to be some real interest and motivation for these things. Of course, the Israel Antiquities Authority doesn't have an interest of digging Christian sites. They are the ones that promote all of that. They have a huge budget from Israeli government these days, but their main interest is to dig sites that have importance for Israel in Israel history. They're not interested in Christian history. And it's not that they don't care. They're just not going to use their money to be digging Christian sites, right? If someone digs and finds, great. They are going to go there. They do a great job doing that, but they don't have the interest of finding. So it has to be some secular institution that will go there and do that. And so among the Catholics, the Franciscans are the ones who do more work. Franciscans do a lot of the work. They have bought many sites, and there are sites that they're still digging and studying. Franciscans do a lot. And there are some Protestants that are doing. So the Society for Biblical Archaeology here in the United States that has their headquarters in Texas is the one that does the most, the one that found the curse inscription on the Mount of Kurs, are the ones that have found other sites and are digging a lot. But still, they are foreigners, and they go for 3 months out of an year. This year, they probably won't go because of the war. During COVID, 2 years, they didn't go. If you dig something, you have to do all the documentation with Israeli authorities. Then you can study the item. So it's a huge effort. It requires a lot of money. So you would think, like, why this thing? Let's go there and let's dig. And no. Also, the dig has to be very careful, right? They dig with paintbrushes. However possible it is, right? So it's a very careful, it's a work that requires more intelligent than muscle, and it's not that easy. So you say, why they don't dig and try to find that church? Well, because of all these elements. And even if they do find, I mean, it might not be so meaningful to those that have the power to do it. So eventually in the future, yes, but not right now. And as you know, these places are not for sale. I mean, land inside that inner wall of Jerusalem, they're not. Who has it will not sell for anything. You can offer them $1 billion and it's not for sale. No one is selling anything there. They are being kept by who owns them. Now, this ends pretty much for us Jerusalem. There's not much archaeology of the early church in Jerusalem. We need to move out of Jerusalem. Then where to look? We hear that a group of Samaritans was converted, but we don't know what kind of church and if there was a church. But we hear that another church was formed, and that we see very active in Acts, is the church of Antioch. But, bad news, this is all that we have left of old Antioch, the road that goes to it. Because a major earthquake that happens in the 4th century, then again one in the major city destroyed completely old Antioch. The same happened to Ephesus, by the way. Ephesus from the Bible is far from the shore as it was in Bible times because of earthquakes. Like the Mediterranean is under a seismic fault. Seismic, right? Fault? Seismic fault. And there's a lot of earthquake there. I told you, like the Sea of Galilee and the River Jordan are, it's where the two tectonic plates meet. That's the Sea of Galilee and the River Jordan was formed by seismic events. So earthquakes happened there. Earthquake happened when Jesus was crucified, right? And it's not the only one. We have a few reference to earthquakes there. So a lot of these things were destroyed. And Antioch was destroyed. So we don't have much. But again, tradition will say that this is the St. Peter Church of Antioch. So this building that is there is from the 4th, 5th century and is believed by tradition to be the original site where the church was founded through the preaching of Peter. There's a big problem here is that Peter was not the one that founded the Church of Antioch. But that's the Greek Orthodox tradition because they need to have Peter as the first pope, the one that founded. And this is the main important church for the Greek Orthodox, is where their pope came from. They are from the papacy of Antioch, as the Roman Catholic will be from the papacy of Rome. And they will say, well, Peter might have founded Rome and became the pope there, but he was a pope here first. So we have, you know, it's those debates that happen. So as you see inside the building, it's a small building, but very old, 4th, 5th century, very interesting building. This will be the pulpit. And again, just to go back, Christian symbols here, Alpha and Omega. We're going to discuss that in the future. Here there's a St. Peter's statue. And here you have a better perspective of how it is. So it's a mosaic floor, very common from the time. Very crude still as it is. There's another photo, I assume, I believe. Oh, yeah, just no. So that is the church of Antioch. Is this the original site? Most likely it is not, because there are the ruins of the old Antioch, but part of it was kind of was like a big rift open and part of the city fell on it. So it was like it's one of those scenes from Exodus kind of punishment kind of idea. But we don't have much left. So we don't have anything from the Church of Antioch. Or we can even go after anything in the Church of Antioch. Then we have something that is interesting, but we're trying to find the smoking gun here. So we go to Hierapolis, and we have a 4th century church that has the foundations of a 1st century, and when they dug in the foundations of the 1st century, they found a tomb. And then, according to some studies and comparison of texts, it has been said that this place is believed to be where the Apostle Philip was buried. And this is in Turkey, in Minor Asia. So these are the remains of that church. I mean, this is the remains of the city. The next one, this would be the main street in the city. Again, part of the main street. Here you have the church, the basilica, and at the very end of it, you have this little crypt, and this foundation, all that is believed to be the first century foundation upon which was built a church. Was this a first century church building? No. There was a first century church? No. it is believed that was a first century building, but we don't know that it was a first century really church. What we have is a fourth century church on top of it, which is just going back a little bit, going to the next one. So you have the whole element of a fourth century church. And you have a building that is first century, but you cannot say that it was a first century building. However, that's what we have for in terms of the apostles. And there's a few other things that I'll show to you, some in Rome that we probably will see next week, but that's, we're looking at Palestine. So what is the first proven archaeological evidence of a church in Palestine? Is this one here. 5th century. So 5th century engraving found, repurposed. I don't think I wanted to. I meant repurposed. I meant something else. In a Byzantine church building's wall in Jezreel Valley. Jezreel Valley is north of Jerusalem. It's like in between Jerusalem and Galilee, more to the west towards the sea, but not on the shore. And it says, Christ born of Mary, this work of the most God-fearing and pious bishop Theodosius and the miserable Thomas was built from the foundation. So there are walls from this building. Some mosaics were seen. And this is what it is believed to be. It's a Christian site in Palestine or in the Holy Land, the proven first Christian building with irrefutable evidence is only a 5th century building that was actually very recently dug. And this is it. Okay? So comes the question. And maybe we will we will kind of stop here. So comes the question. Why is the question? Why so little evidence? Why so little evidence? Christianity is the most powerful religion in the world. The richest countries in the world are professed Christians or has a good number of Christians. Christianity is the major religion in the world in terms of numbers. It has been for 2,000 years. It has been a driving force. Why we don't see more of it? Why we don't see more of it? Why everything that we see is 4th century, 5th century, 4th century, 5th century? Well, here are a few takes. First of all, the first Christians did not see themselves and did not live differently than Jews. A Christian household in the first 2 decades would resemble any Jewish household, and they met in houses. So, the first Christians were what? Jews. The church starts to be Gentile in Antioch, but still the majority was Jews. And until at least the turn of the century, from the first, second century, it is believed that there were a balance between Jews and Gentiles, and it starts to get more Gentile in it. But even so, the first Christians adopted a lot of the Jewish traditions themselves. For instance, in Acts chapter 15, when it stated that they should not, that the Gentiles don't need to circumcise, it's a decision. They don't need to circumcise. It says this. For it has seemed